Welcome to season 3 of And the Writer Is. I am your host, Ross Golan. I've written with hundreds of artists and writers over the years, and my favorite part of each session is the first hour when we catch up about life, the industry, politics, composition, whatever. So this is a journey of learning why people write songs, how people write songs, and most importantly, who the people are who write the songs. I'm producing this with the great Joe London, Big Deal Music Publishing, and Mega House Music Management. If you want to listen to the songs we discuss in this podcast, follow us on our socials, find out about special events, or buy some of our merchandise, go to our website, www.andthewriteris.com. Oh, and if you enjoy And the Writer Is, please rate and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your preferred podcast listening site is.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to And the Writer Is. I am your host, Ross Golan. Today's multi-platinum number one hit writing Grammy-nominated writer-producer has made a huge name for himself in the pop world, working with some of the biggest artists in the industry, including Justin Bieber, Selena Gomez, Britney Spears, and Blake Shelton. He is a linchpin in the writing community and might be the most mentioned writer amongst former And the Writer Is guests. A&R people ask for his sound because it sounds like the future, but his sound doesn't get in the way of the song. All the way from the San Fernando Valley, this neurotic producer makes me laugh more than any other, and the writer is Ian Kirkpatrick.
That's the most incredible. Can I tattoo that whole thing on my arm or something?
Yeah, but you should have like the corrections
and no, like the, all the that. Stutters the and thing. All. Yeah. Like second dot, takes dot, and dot, all. Cut, yeah. Cut. The listeners won't know, but that's actually the 13th time he said it. And each time got progressively more intense. There was a little, sound a little like sarcasm in there. That was...
No. Okay, so hi, Ian.
Hey, man.
This is awesome.
I'm so excited. And by the way, you know, congratulations on the success of this. I certainly have learned a lot from about what people really think about me. Because as you said, most mentioned.
There you go.
Yeah.
I think what's weird about the podcast, we don't really talk about the podcast on the podcast because it's really meta. But, you know, But like when we were starting this, it was like a year ago. And it's our community and being like, let's just talk about whatever. I don't know, something, a conversation that our community can have with ourselves, not in like an ego way, but like, so that way when we're old, it can be like, oh yeah, we're friends with each other. And that's what they were like. And when
remember
they were
that
young.
Old podcast yeah. that we did.
I don't know. There was something about just documenting it, not expecting other people to listen to it.
Yeah.
And I think what's been fun is like one at a time, just trying to whittle our way through our community of writers and just kind of have conversations. And it's fun to just kind of go through.
Which is literally the best part of, maybe the best part of the job is like the people you meet. Because every writer is a little crazy. Every producer's, well, maybe not every producer's, but you know, neurotic or like just a little too OCD.
Yeah.
So the characters.
Where does your OCD come from?
Oh my gosh. Besides the caffeine.
A real way.
Oh, I used to draw like really detailed drawings of like factories, like make up like tree recycling factories that would create things. And my dad would walk by and be like, you're paranoid. like something is, you know, a little,
wait,
in
what
a nice
were you
way.
Drawing?
You know, little like schematics of like, you know, factory belts that would like, you know, this is not interesting. We don't have to talk about the sources of OCD. Where does any OCD
come
from?
No, that is interesting.
But it's like details. You know, like little detailed stuff.
How old were you when you were doing that?
Oh my God, 6, 7. This is like a long, 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 it's like a couple of years ago.
Are you good at math?
I was when I was in college.
When you were in college?
Speaking of math, there's a lot of math to songwriting, guys.
So we jumped from like
trying to get to the transition to something interesting.
Let's go. No, I want to tell a little bit of your story because like that explains a lot of who people are, and to me, I think that explains why they write music the way they do. Is telling a little bit of their story. So let's go from the beginning. You're born to whom and where?
I'm born to my mom.
Sure.
What is that like?
Who are your parents?
My parents, Rosie and Michael, the foundation.
Sure.
Are
they musicians?
My mom is a painter, an artist.
Is that her job?
No, she was. I mean, she's retired now, but she was like a secretary.
Uh-huh. You know,
she was, she's very intensely smart. Like, had a degree in psychology, but. Then met my dad and just now she's in the kitchen all the time. That's a joke. That's not true at all. They got divorced. I don't really want to talk about it.
Sure.
No. My mom was like into psychology and a painter, and my dad is a total, hippie. Like I think he met my mom in Paris when he was making chocolate mousse or something like that. I don't really know the story very well because it always changes. But like they're both very eclectic people. And I think that, me now that makes me an Irish Moroccan Jew, which is like the weirdest. Maybe that's where the OCD comes from.
I mean, 100%. I mean,
like Middle Eastern blood and Irish blood.
Anyway, so you're first generation American?
Yeah, born here.
But
although
you're
I spoke French for like the first 2 years of my life, apparently.
Do you speak any French now?
A little bit. Not well, though. It's kind of, I'm kind of embarrassed by that. Like, I want to take French now to, because girls like that.
did you grow up in a...
No, they don't.
In a community that was, like, was there a Moroccan community or anything like that? Like,
No.
So it was sort of like you guys were on an island.
Yeah, we were, like, lower middle class at the bottom of the hill in Encino. Public school, everything. But my parents got a drum set for me when I was 5. And there's the genesis. Didn't take any drum lessons, but was always playing in like really interesting bands. And by interesting, I mean terrible, like up until high school. And then I think also part of the OCD, in the production and stuff and the details comes from the Aphex Twin, who was like my favorite composer, and his stuff, and like Square Pusher and Autechre, they all go like so detailed. And then I had this aspiration to, over the years, it's become my aspiration to like bring that into pop, all the little cuts and stuff. And like, I love that shit.
Did you play live?
Yes, very. I was the one that was always like, you'd see like the pictures before the sets, and I was always sweating already because I was so nervous. And so I think that also was a big part, because even as a drummer, like you're behind everything, but I was still so nervous to play live. Like just having people stare at you, like even right now.
what was the name of the band and that you would, did you have a band when you were particular that you were in for a while? Or was it more that you just kind of played with whoever?
I played with whoever. Friends, there was a band called Middle Room that I think that was like the first time I ever played to a metronome. It was amazing. It was terrible. I mean, it was awful. That was the first time I was in a studio ever with like the double glass doors and everything. And it was really intimidating.
Do you have that recording? It'd be interesting to hear that now.
This is where you faded in.
Yeah.
It's like my terrible playing. Poots. Oh my God.
Do you have a sibling, right?
Yeah, I have a younger sister.
Does she play instruments?
She doesn't. She lives in San Francisco and she is... I mean, she's like, she knows everything there is to know about wine, cheese, and weed.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think she takes more after my father. Like, she's so fucking smart in very specific areas. Like, I don't know. Now she's like a weed expert. She's working for some incredible, like, I don't know, what do you call them? Plantations?
Sure.
What do you call the weed places?
Yeah, weed farms.
Yeah, weed farm. A weed farm.
I don't know if that's right. Did you DJ?
Yes.
Because like when you're talking about like Aphex Twin and all that stuff, like those guys are, I mean, they're producers, but I think that's like really, that's
they put on shows too that are like insane. I tried for a minute, and the thing was that, you know, I got like the Technics 1200s, and I was like, you know, listening to, you know, Cut Chemist and Kid Koala and all those like weird DJ vinyl guys, but vinyl was so expensive, and I was just a broke high school kid, so I couldn't continue.
What's your what was your DJ name?
DJ IXL.
Which
it's
is
so embarrassing. I accelerate.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
But it's like the letters
IXL.
Yeah.
And then in college.
Does that just mean like BPMs? Just you just keep
I don't
adding
know.
BPMs?
I don't know what I was thinking.
Like, what is IXL?
I mean, where do
or
any
IXL like I accelerate, but not like IXL like
like
oh,
maybe
I do
like
really
IXL
well.
At I could have been like IXL at things, but I didn't really excel at things. I don't know.
Are you a good student?
No. I was always on the computer. I got like, you know, B's, and I didn't get into most of the colleges that I wanted to just because I spent so much time at home on my computer.
What college did you end up going
to? I ended up going to UC Santa Cruz. I mean, thank God they accepted me. But I went for economics. And I started a minor in electronic music, which I thought would be cool. But
oh, they had a minor in
they
that?
They did. But by that time, like I was, you know, this is another thing maybe with the OCD. It's like when I start to do something, like when I heard the Aphex Twin, that was in like 98 maybe. And I was like, that's when I was like, I need a computer because drumming is not going to let me do all these crazy things and chopping and stuff. So I had just started, you know, when I get an idea, like I have to go learn everything about it. So when I got to the minor, it was just like, dude, like I know all this and, you know, this is, they were just not on my level. No, they didn't get geeky enough, you know? And it was just like, and I don't even know if I can say this. He won't listen. The teacher smelled bad. He was always had this like reek of body odor. It was really offensive and it ruined it for me, totally.
I always think of Mr. Keen, who's my algebra teacher from when I was in seventh grade.
Are they not aware of it?
And there are certain things where like I smell certain people and I think of like how he used to just like chain smoke on his breaks, come into the like seventh grade math room and be like, wow, you smell so...
Think of cigarettes.
So bad. And his breath was just like out of control with coffee. And anyway, this is sort of besides the point.
Yeah, what were we talking about? Oh, for school.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I did that minor smelly for like 5 minutes. Smelly teacher. Teacher was too smelly. Quit the minor. Just kept doing stuff on my own.
Did you finish school?
I did. I got a degree in economics.
Nice.
Yeah, my degree is signed by Arnold Schwarzenegger.
What?
Oh, yeah.
It's
California.
School?
Yeah, but again, that, you know... I was always doing, it's like, you know, I was always doing music on the side. And then I graduated and I met Dan, who's now my manager and life coach.
How did you meet Dan?
I met Dan through my friend Omri, actually before college. And he was like, you know, I have like a few grand. I'm going to buy this hard disk recorder. And my friend said, you know, like to record stuff. You want to do something? I'm like, sure, why not? And we like I graduated and immediately we were in his mom's garage recording like shitty local bands. And slowly over the years, I was also building websites.
Did you know you were a producer? Or were you like, no, I can engineer this? Were you an engineer or a producer?
I was both, but the thing, like I always love to hear stories about people like I wanted to do music, I came to LA. And I don't have that story. I was just always doing music, but then it slowly started taking up more time and it was like, oh, this is now a job, you know? Even though I had to live at home till, I don't know, 29 because, you know, you don't make, I don't know, whatever.
What?
It's hard, it's a struggle you don't make that much. Well, first of all, you can make money recording bands. You can have a studio business. And for a while that was it. But then when I started writing on the projects I was producing and then I got a publishing deal and it was like, oh my God, pop. Like you can, like, and then it like slowed down. Then it was like, you know, I didn't get a cut for 2 years, I think, after I got my publishing deal.
How old were you when you got your publishing deal?
Fuck, 26?
And was it always with Warner Chappell?
Always Warner Chappell.
And Dan, did with Mark Wilson?
Mark Wilson hit me up on MySpace.
No way.
Yeah. Like, bro, because we went to elementary school together.
You and Mark?
Yeah, and apparently at a talent show, I play the drums at a talent show and he was in the audience. He's like, dude, like I still remember that performance.
Wow.
Yeah, and then he claims, I don't know if this is true, he claims that like that got him inspired and he started playing bass after that, like he got into music, and which eventually like, you know, by then he'd already been working for Warner Chappell. And he was like, oh, I just always thought about that show. And like, here you are, you know, we should talk. I work for Warner Chappell. And I was like, no way.
And you were just coincidentally still in music, and now you're starting to record local bands and stuff like that.
I mean, I was doing a lot of Warped Tour bands that were, you know, on Fearless Records, and which was awesome because they would, you know, actually pay me to produce stuff. And it wasn't just weird local kids, you know, it was like bands that actually had a following, and, you know, I could go on YouTube and read like, this sucks. And I'd be like, oh, nice. You know, people are commenting on things. But, you know, yeah, after getting, I don't know, when you start writing songs, it's difficult.
Right.
And that was when I was finding all, you know, all my, who would become my people.
Was there a point where you're like, you know, the DJ thing's not going to work out? And like, you know.
That was long before
that.
Yeah, I mean, I would DJ parties in college with vinyl, with like, so which meant you had 30 songs. Right. And then you had to turn on a stereo because it was like, all right, guys, that's the set you've probably heard like 8 times. It was like Fatboy Slim and Chemical Brothers and Basement Jacks.
Yeah.
Shout out Basement Jacks.
So good.
The best.
I think the first thing I remember coming to LA, because there was just the DJ scene where I grew up was non-existent and hip hop was non-existent. And I just remember coming to LA and it was like all West Coast rap and people listening to ATB.
Oh my God. Remember that?
Yeah.
The piano thing, the bendy piano notes.
And it was just like, it's like the cheesiest kind of like melody thing.
Don't stop.
And the cover of his album is like him in front of a private jet. This is ATB. And I was just
I remember saying to
people in my school, it's like, nah, electronic music is going to be where music is. But it was like a, you know, jazz and classical influence music program at the time. Like there just wasn't really a pop program like there is now. And it took a long time to be like, no, this is what the future is. And you had teachers who were like, no, it's always going to be analog. It'll never be digital because digital doesn't sound as good. You have all the kids in their rooms like using Reason and trying to like be like, no, you're crazy. Like check out this sound and this sound.
Yeah. Actually, that Reason was the first program. Propeller Heads Reason was the first program that it was like, this is freedom. This is freedom to create. And also, I was on that wave. I was thinking that, you know, electronic music is the future. And then when I heard, you know, I was doing Warped Tour stuff and then Panic of the Disco came out, the record that Matt Squire did where it was like techno and, you know, rock. And it was like, this is it. And that's what like helped, you know, give me the confidence to think that I could put all those weird electronic stuff. Thank you, Matt.
Shout out, Matt.
Shout out, Matt Squire. Legend.
Of the bands you started working with, I assume, you know, Plain White Tees is part of that. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, when you started doing that, and then you start doing, like, your first hits with Breathe Carolina, but that's all the way 2011. So you have, like, a few years in there of just kind of, like, grinding through.
Meandering.
Meandering.
Yeah. Those few years are definitely when I started trying to do pop because that was like the competition for songs there was just, you know, you're competing with the Max Martins and, you know, Dr. Luke's. And it's like, I think that's why I didn't get a cut for so long because it was just, it's just really difficult. But yeah. I liked the challenge. But at the same time, it was like, I know you're big on the math. And I learned a lot from you, actually, with respect to that. Which is, we actually met because of Breathe Carolina. You remember?
Yeah.
You came in with a song idea.
Yeah.
I think it was like,
yeah.
Mile High Club or something like that.
Yeah, that shit was
fire. And it was fire. It, I mean, it was for that time, yeah. Maybe still actually. Did you ever write that song?
No, I mean, the thing is, like, I always like coming in with some sort of concept and melody to start.
I remember being so impressed with you. I was like, damn, this guy's for real. Because you're one of the for real writers. I think like that week I met Cash too, and he was so not interested. He was like, I had played him some beats. He's like, yeah, man, like, yeah, like, send me that one, I guess. I don't know.
That's really funny.
I was like, cool.
Well, it's weird because, like, everyone tries to find their own footing. And it's, you know, there's something about generations of writers where, like, for sure there's a generation after us that's, like, that's becoming friends and are working together.
Yeah.
Who are, like, itching to just to just kind of like take over, and they're going to end up with have moments like Cash is having or Tranter's having, you know. Where it's going to be the next generation soon enough. Yeah. And it's just interesting because
do you remember being that, like, the up and comer?
Yeah, I still feel like I'm an up and comer in so many ways, and that's what's so strange when people who are younger or newer kind of look for advice, and you're like, yeah, but I mean, I got a lot to learn still.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's like achievements that make you not an up and comer. It's just like if you've been doing it long enough, you start to think like I'm not that anymore. Even though, yeah, like every day. That's the thing about songwriting is every day there's like some new thing. You're like, oh, this week I'm on, you know, opposites. And now I want to like, you know, do contrast or let's start with the chorus. I heard this one song, you know, or it's like there's no like general rule or, you know.
Just to write is like the most, like the first thing people do, I think, is like they go through this phase of they walk in the room, they write, and they just write a song. And there's no intention. And there's no like, you know, there's such a difference between writing a song and writing a song that can compete. Yeah. It's so easy to write a song. You pick up an instrument. You don't even need to pick up an instrument. Just start singing a melody and throw some lyrics on it. But if you're going to really like craft something that'll stick out and eventually move its way into the zeitgeist, like you have to compete with, you know, the greatest writers in the game right now are writing, you know, five songs a week, every week, all year long. So for you to compete with that, that means you have to outwrite that. And that just seems daunting as shit.
The other side of it, though, is that, like, you know, I think Charlie Puth said he wrote See You Again in 15 minutes. It's like, wait, what? Right. I mean, like, there's no, like, general, and then there's other songs, like, I remember Tom Higginson told me that he wrote Hey There, Delilah, and it took him, like, 6 months to finish the lyrics.
Yeah.
It's just, there's no default, which is, that's daunting to me that, like, you know, like...
But that's a good example of somebody who's, sorry to interrupt, but that's a good example of...
I was about to make the best point of the podcast. Yeah. Like, I don't know why. You know, I'm really hungover today, and, like, a train of thought for me is rare right now, so...
So don't interrupt that.
Let it go. See what happens.
You have like prodigies, and you have like people who are schooled. You know, you have some people. I do think that people like, I think Charlie Puth is pretty rare.
Totally.
You know, I think most people are people who have to edit their way through genius.
Charlie's one of the guys you get angry at. He's like, he's so good. You're like, man, how old are you again? Damn it. You know,
around that time where you have Breathe Carolina, you end up having a song that goes top 40. I mean, Blackout's pretty big.
Number 13, I think. That was a huge deal.
That's a huge deal.
That got me sessions. I mean, I think that got me session with you. That got me a session with Bonnie, which I totally failed at. It was like, I was hot for a minute after that song. I got a bunch of like, you know, meetings with people. And that was like actually an important lesson because I got a bunch of meetings and I got a bunch of really good sessions, and I didn't really capitalize on it because I wasn't like fast enough in person, and I got really nervous. Like, I was in the room with Bonnie. I was like, oh my God, Bonnie McKee. And then, you know, I couldn't get any sessions anymore after a while. And it was like, shit, I get how it goes now. Like, I have to have something, and then people think you're, you know, I'm as good as I was, but I happen to not have anything, you know, popping right now. So can't get a session with, you know, Ross Golan. I'm just kidding.
You were writing with, I mean, you wrote Blackout with Simon Wilcox.
Yes.
So like you're already writing though with people who, like, you're already starting to develop the community that we're going to get into.
Yeah, and I was working with Lindy Robbins and their lot, which is, and then that's how I met Julia Michaels. And I feel like I should say last names.
Sure. No, right? That works.
But I mean, that's when you start finding your people during that 2 year struggle of like trying to get a cut with an artist on a major label. That's when I met most of the people I still work with today. Like, that's when I met those are the real friends, you know? Like, Julia Michaels is like my little sister. Like, I literally love her and am, you know, vastly annoyed by her sometimes. It's that kind of relationship. But that's what makes the writing with, you know, like when I write with you, I'm writing with my friends. It's the best.
Well, this is the community. We ended up talking about it a little bit with Lindy and with Julia and Sean and Evigan. Like, this Simon.
Yo, it's so much love, right?
Like it is genuine, like family in the sense that, like, if I see the monsters or something like that, it's like the biggest hug you can get. If you see Steph, you're gonna get, like,
you know, you pointed this out, I think it was like years ago at some camp. You were like, it's so funny because in the, you know, back in the day, like it used to be so cutthroat and competitive, and now it's just like everyone else's cheerleader, you know, and it's so like, oh, you know. Nolan got this song. It's like, oh, fuck yeah, Nolan, I love that guy. Or the Monsters have this. Fuck yeah, man, that's great. You know, it's so heartwarming. And it's like,
it's a choice,
you get excited, right? For sessions because they're your friends. Not because like this person, oh man, this person has number one right now. This is going to be sick. It's like, no, it's like, oh, it's fucking Joe. Dude, Joe London, like, fuck yeah, let's go, you know, let's go get coffee. And like, what I love about your, like the sessions we do, we talk for 2 hours and the song will come out of that conversation, you know? Which is, I think, my favorite way to write. I try to, wow, I've learned so much from you.
What?
Seriously. All the math, because you were one of the only people I was working with that had worked with Max. So you were so like calculated, and that just resonates with the OCD. I love that. But calculated in a smart way, not like this has to be like this. It's like, here's where you can employ this math.
The hardest thing that I try, I get
this
really envious.
This ends up being a Roscoe in an interview.
Yeah, it's weird. I get really envious when people are like, when somebody's like, no, I get the math, but I like this better. Ooh. And they stick with it.
Ego.
And you get into this thing of like, okay, sometimes you have like the I think the magic comes in that initial impulse, like how I sing over certain chords or how you write certain chords around certain melodies or whatever, and then you edit through with the knowledge of like, oh yeah, well this actually helps and this doesn't.
Yeah,
like personally.
Yeah,
but it's amazing how many times like I'm around somebody who's like, yeah, I want to go here, and I believe in this, and to say, okay.
Yeah, well, that's like the even more meta part about writing sessions is that not only are you like a skilled songwriter, but you're a skilled session haver. You know, for instance, you won't stop a session in the first verse and be like, I don't like that lyric. You'll wait till the song's written, so now no one's as precious about that lyric in the first verse. And it's like, now, you know, it's not about your critique, it's about the timing of your critique. It's like there's an art, like, and that's like the wave I'm trying to be on, is like, how can I get the most out of these top liners in a session? How can I make them comfortable? You know, do I bring drugs? Like,
but what's weird is like, okay, so top liners all know the producers because they go producer to producer to producer, but we don't get to work with each other.
Yeah.
And same thing with, it's like, you're not necessarily working with a ton of producers, but I guess this is a little different of a generation where you obviously work a lot with Monsters and Strangers and some other producers, but where do you learn how to run a session?
I mean, that for me personally, mm-hmm. So before I was just writing, you know, doing songs for pitch and working with, you know, singular artist like a Dua Lipa or something, it was bands. I was doing Plain White Tees, Breathe Carolina, the Neon Trees, Young the Giant. Like I was producing bands, and that was a lot of work. And I think part of the reason why I started just doing, you know, writing for pop was because that was killing me. It was like you had to become a psychologist and you had to balance five different people's egos. And I, you know, the guitar player would be like, yo, can I talk to you for a second? Like, yo, fucking, you know, Chad, our bass. Chad's such a bass player name. Chad, the bass player, is like, he's being a dick. You know, I just want to make sure we do this. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool, cool. And then like 10 minutes later, Chad's like, yo, Ian, let me talk to you, man. You know, yo, fucking Rick, our guitar player. What's a good guitar player name? Steve's a guitar player name. Steve is like being a total dick, man. Like, what the hell? I'll be like, yeah, cool. And it would be that. It would just be like infighting.
You're like, listen, Chad, I know Steve's being a dick, but Rick had a good point.
No, then you'd, right. You'd have to have a powwow. Yeah, you know, like, Rick, all right, everybody, let's, you know what?
Kevin's come trying
back
to say something.
Come back in the control room. Let's cut it right here. Let's talk. You know, we go in the kitchen. Let's, you know what? Let's take a break. Like, that's where I think I started to realize that there was an art to, you know, how cohesive a session goes. And also where I realized I don't want to work with full bands anymore, because it's like 3 months of your life. I mean, you know this, Joe. You produce, you do projects, you know, and it's like it's stressful, especially when band members aren't getting along. Yeah, a lot of drama.
We kind of have a similar arc where we go, we're working with all these bands, and we're working with like we're working in the like the this alternative space, and then our first like money making song is a country song. Kinda. I mean, well, I guess Breathe Carolinas before this with Blackout, but Blake Shelton, you have a song, and it becomes
so random.
It's on a number one country album that wins the CMA like album of the year and everything, and you're like not a country dude.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I mean, that song was written, I think it was written for someone else, and then was around for like a year. And that was one of the first demos that I sang, and I did it with piano, and then all of a sudden it was a Blake Shelton song, and it was like, but that cut for some reason gave me so much cred. He was like, you have a Blake Shelton cut, like, that's incredible. And then I started going to Nashville more to write. That's when I met like the real storytellers. I mean, that's a whole nother tangent, but Nashville is like real musicians. I feel like an idiot when I go out there. They're like, let's take 3-5 to the one. I'm like, what?
Well, everyone here has a specialty. It's like, oh, I'm a verse lyricist. Not really, but like on some level, people are
I'm really good at, I do bridges really well.
Yeah, there's always somebody who does like
bridge master.
Well, especially during like the drop phase, you were killing that.
Oh yeah, the dubstep bridge.
Yeah, the dubstep bridge. Those
shout out
those
dubstep
killed me.
That shit was difficult.
It's like cut out half of what we do. Well, one third of what we do. But the idea of like there's specialties, and in Nashville, it's like, oh no, everybody also plays an instrument. Everybody
very
also
well,
writes lyrics, and everyone also sings, and everyone does a little bit of everything at least. Yeah. And here it's like in the pop world, there are people who just do drums.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's like a strange.
Well, also in Nashville, there's like, oh, I know that my keyboard guy or my drum guy. I mean, they're very specialized there too.
Yeah, they just don't get credit as writers.
Right.
So like no one thinks of putting them as part of like putting them in the writing session.
I feel like if you ever get lost in the LA like pop game, you go to Nashville to ground yourself again and be like, this is songwriting. And and then you take little bits of Nashville back and you know, bring it to LA and be like, because they're just it's all feeling there. You know?
And they're all nice and positive.
Yes.
So you walk away, you're like, you know what? I wrote 10 hits. None of them get cut.
None of them.
But I was like, man,
everyone gets
so
put on
positive.
Hold, though.
Yeah, cool.
For like a year and a half.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So, you come out of, it's like 2014. This is probably right when you and I really start kind of working together, so I'm starting to follow a little bit of what's happening. Yeah.
I'm bad with years and like how old I was.
But you work on the Nick Jonas album. You start having some stuff on Nick Jonas, and this is right around when you do these like writing camps amongst this group of writers, and
shit. I wish I had a name for them, like the Infamous Five or like something.
Yeah.
Like
that. So the Infamous Five, which is probably 17 people.
Yeah, there was actually more than five.
You end up with probably, you know, maybe top 10 biggest radio song of the last 10 years kind of thing with Want to Want Me.
Yeah.
That
was written in Arrowhead at one of those little, I mean, that's like the Lindy Robbins crew.
Yeah.
She amassed Evigan, Mitch Allen, Julia, Sam Martin, me. And I was like I think me and Julia were like the only ones that didn't have any songs on the radio at that point. And yeah, that came from, I mean, I think that was like the second time we did that little camp.
Did you know that was a hit when you finished it? Or at that point, since you're like, well, I haven't really had the cuts yet, it's like, no. It's just a song.
I didn't know ever myself, but that was the first time I got email responses from Mike Caron that were like, this is a smash, but you should do this first. And I didn't know, I mean, you know, Mike Caron was a big reason that song is a hit is Mike Caron. You know, he was like, you should try this chord in the chorus and do something high here, you know? Like just the right amount of suggestion to like, thank you, Mike Caron.
Exactly.
He's a G.
I haven't talked to him on email since, I don't know, an hour.
Yeah. You know, Mike Caron also, a quick story is that Mike Caron was like, he was fucking with me for 2 years and I was just kept letting him down. He would give me opportunity after opportunity. Like that guy knows how to identify potential.
Yeah.
You know, and he kept like, he stayed on it. So super shout out. Much respect.
You end up becoming kind of the sound of Jason Derulo during this time with, you know.
Thank you.
The having Cheyenne right after that.
Yeah, Cheyenne.
Cheyenne kind of became, and I'm curious because like I know you have big hits after this, so I don't mind asking, but Cheyenne was one of those songs where it was like, it obviously didn't do as well as the previous song. There had to be a feeling of, you know, you're about to have the second single, so, you know, let's start cashing checks now. And then it doesn't really work. Why do you think it didn't work?
Well, I think, and I've said this to the Monsters, that was one of the first co-productions I ever did, and the song is grossly overproduced. And like we both, myself and the Monsters learned from that song because we just, it was like missing something and we just threw everything at it. But I think, I don't know what, you know, the song, you know, why does any song not work? I don't know. Like, but honestly, it didn't work out and I was like, cool. But I think I'd had so much time before the hit of just being constantly disappointed and that it was just like, oh, that's just what happens, you know?
You like, kind of fall back into like the...
My new theory on the best, like who are the best songwriters and producers are the people that lose the best. Like if you can be not precious about like a song doesn't get cut, it's like, I don't care. I'll work on a song all day. Like we'll work on an idea for 5 hours, be like, you know, fuck this, let's start something new. It's like the best songwriters I know, the best producers I know are the least precious and have the most like confidence in themselves. Like, you know what? I hope I'll have another good idea, but I'm pretty sure I will. So I'm not going to get too attached to this. You know, you put your heart and soul into it, but then once it's done or you realize it's not working, you can just move on without any sort of like damage. And that takes, and you know, when you get critique back on a song, to actually be like, you know what, if I was a money producer, I'd be able to satisfy everyone. Let's see if I can do that. Instead of being like, she doesn't like it. Oh man, like, what did I do wrong? It's like, when you can separate yourself from your work, you know, when you learn how to lose gracefully, it's like, you know, people are like, some young writers are like, I have this song, this one song. And it's like, I hear it, I'm like, this sucks, dude. Write another one though. You know, this part was great, write another one. And it's like, it's so heartbreaking. Like,
yeah, it's all the
it's the best losers
are the most successful.
I think so, or the least precious, not best losers. I mean, that sounds so like mean, but it's, no, but not it's what I mean. Not. But you know, like losing as in like not a song doesn't get cut or something. It's like you just write more.
Yeah, you can swallow your pride enough to move on to the next song.
Yeah, like, and there's like, no ego. No, I mean, this is why it's great to write with, you know, you guys. It's like we know each other and we're not worried about hurting each other's feelings. You know, it's like, we're just here to try to write a great song. And, you know, we don't care if we work on a song for all day and then nothing happens from it, you know? Mile High Club never got cut.
Yeah. And I'm still hurting, frankly. I actually don't know what's happened.
Yeah. That was all a lie. I cry every day.
Yeah, the last 5 years have been brutal for me because of that. You prick. Dude, that was you had to bring up my weakest moment is to bring up Mile High Club. I think that's sage advice. You have
Thank you.
You have
you have to wait 20 minutes into the wait, how long is the podcast?
Yeah. It's been 6 hours, I think. Okay. So you have The Feeling featuring Halsey that comes out on Bieber's album, and I think what's kind of crazy about that is that gets you the Grammy nomination.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, of all the things that you work on in your life, you just never know, like, what's the song or what's the, you know.
Yep.
And the timing of it, it's just fascinating that it's like, you know, it's a song that you like, and then it gets cut, and then it...
Maybe that's that randomness, like, you just throw a million things at the wall and see what sticks, yeah. And, like, you don't know where what song's going to do well. Like, I didn't know New Rules was a hit. You know, I was mad that, like, Travis Scott was not on the bridge. He was supposed to do the bridge. And then I was like, man, like, that sucks. Like, why is this not happening? And then Jeff Fenster the other day is like, do you realize how much that would have fucked the song up? The message, the video, I'm like, oh my God, I don't know anything. I don't know anything. And that's probably what contributes to the lack of, like, being precious. It's like, man, I didn't see that coming. Or I really hoped for that one and it didn't work. It's like, I didn't know that was going to be a Grammy-nominated record.
It's insane. Levels is another one of those, same with Monsters, and really similar to Cheyenne, except for, like, to me, I like Cheyenne, and I think that there's a purpose in slowing down the tempo after an up tempo, all that stuff for, like, when that's a single. Levels to me is like, and we've discussed this with Nick too, like, how did Levels not work? To me,
How it works. I know how it didn't work.
I love that song.
That song didn't work because of 1 week of some research came back not good. It was too early to do the research. It was at something like, you know, and this is maybe a good story for people to hear. That, like, it was, I think we were in. I was in the studio with the Monsters at the time, who I co-produced a song with, and it was like, I don't know, 13 with a bullet of 1200, and we were like, this is so fucking great. And, like, Mike Karen's like, good, great job, man. This is a good one for you. And I'm like, I'm so excited. Everyone's like, how the fuck did you do this production? That's crazy. Which is really fascinating. There's some really crazy shit in that song that involves, like, oscillators and half steps and stuff. That's crazy. But the research came back not good. And then they just yanked it. And then the next fucking week, it was like number one research. It was like, fuck, you know, what the hell? And it's like that, I mean, I don't know. That's my, also maybe the song was just not, you know, didn't resonate with people. I don't know. That also is the reason why, maybe. But, like, you know, there is some business stuff that just doesn't work out, timing or something like that.
I mean, so, we'll get to it in a little bit, but the same thing happened with Fresh Eyes. When, by the time it got research, it was the highest research song I've ever written.
Dude, how long were they pushing?
And the research came in after they stopped pushing the song. But on some level, radio stations start reading, you know, if it starts to drop on its own before research comes in or something.
It's fear-based marketing. I mean, how long was Charlie Puth's attention on the charts? Dude, New Rules was like 200 days or something like that. And it's just like the slowest builder. And attention went number one because people have faith in a song or something, you know, that. And I think that maybe, you know, Levels was one person's lesson at a label. It was like, oh yeah, you know, fuck. We pulled the plug on this one too soon or something like that.
Yeah, and when it comes down to it, it's still a human. There's still a human who makes
with,
these choices.
With good intentions, too. And it's like, no one's evil. There's no, like, you know, no one's trying to sabotage it. But, like...
But when people say that, like, for a hit song to work, it takes all these things that have to fall into place. And you think, no, I just need to write a hit song and it'll take care of itself. But on some level, somebody along the way can totally... Yeah, exactly. Wait, can you, real quick? Because somebody's going to be like, why didn't you ask him about those crazy oscillator half-step things?
Oh, gosh.
Just tell me when you were like, oh, there's some crazy things with Levels.
Oh, well, I would urge everyone every producer to explore Contact and the script editor. And, you know, because the song came from accidentally throwing the speakerphone plug in on another song, and it had an oscillator that was just like, like, it was like set to oscillate a one semitone down, one semitone up. So then I replicate. So I heard that effect. I'm like, oh my God, that's incredible. And I just had a bass line that was just, and I put it on. It goes, so it's three half steps, just oscillating back and forth. And it was like the coolest shit ever. Learn Contact. It's worth it. Best sampler out there.
The next song that's on your list is Good to Be Alive.
Yes.
Which is pretty fun because we wrote that together.
Yes.
Oh, and
what a fun everything. Every part of that song. Remember when you brought the whole fucking choir into NRG for that?
Yeah, that. I mean, part of the choir ended up being some of, you know, Andy's wife and his dad too. It's just, but yeah, that was incredible. I think what's amazing about that, and I tell people this, and I think it's my, It's either my second or my third most valuable song, whether somebody knows it or not.
Oh, yeah.
The amount of licenses that it got and the
amount
of
what's that about?
You know, I don't know. Whatever it was, the fact that it grabbed a certain time or something, and the way it feels, it feels fresh, but it feels retro, but it doesn't feel retro.
Yeah.
I don't know how to repeat that kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, maybe just hang out with Andy.
Yeah, exactly.
Cause it's literally like he's one of those people that you feel, it's good to be alive. Today was a great day. Like, why? Oh, probably because I wrote with Andy. Like, he's so happy all the time. And
I feel like we laugh harder in those sessions than maybe any other sessions. I don't know what it is, but the combination is
it's been very enjoyable. Pretty great, actually. I mean, the next time we got together was Fresh Eyes.
Which was the second highest research song in Australia last year.
Lit.
Behind Shape of You.
Really?
It was rated 100 on Hot AC Research.
Whoa.
And that on Positivity or something like that, right when it started to drop in the US. And that, you know, it's a platinum selling song. That song is like, if I gave an example of how you can write a song that has emotion that is still compositionally sound.
Yeah.
That's like my favorite structured actual song that maybe I've been a part of.
From the producer's point of view, what I love about that song is that the majority of the vocal was the one that we did the day we wrote it on the couch. I mean, you're like talking in the background of some of it.
Really?
Yeah, it's like the guitar is, most of the guitar is the guitar you played.
No, he played guitar on that. Did I play guitar on that?
You played the riff in the beginning. He played guitar on it too, but some of the guitar that I used that day. Maybe he played it. I don't know. It's basically the point being, it was all from the day we wrote it.
Yeah.
And very like, we redid vocals and it was like, nah, man, the feeling's there. Like just handheld SM7. There's bleed in it and everything, and it's so like.
Well, the thing that's interesting about that song, and
it came from a real story. Do you remember the story?
Yeah, it's not mine. It was Andy's.
It's Andy's story. Yeah,
I love that. Like he always finds a way to, you know, when people think edgy means saying the word fuck or shit, or edgy means you have to talk about sex.
Yeah.
What?
I was like, Ross, don't cuss.
No, gosh.
Oh my God.
But like people say that. They're always like, oh, we need edgy. So they think edgy means, it's just the cheapest form of edginess is to swear.
Yeah.
And there are ways to be edgy by being witty. And he finds a way to talk about something that like we all can agree on that feels a little like uncomfortable to say.
Is Fresh Eyes edgy?
Well, I mean, the whole idea of it, I think, came from like you haven't somebody that you're in a relationship with that you hadn't seen. Like we all live wearing pajamas most of the time, and then you know, all of a sudden, somebody comes in wearing makeup and is all dressed up, and you're like, "I'm seeing you with, you know,
Justin Tranter." Like, always looking fabulous. He comes into sessions like dressed like a fucking star.
He looks right.
And I'm in my sweatpants and he's like, what are you wearing? Like,
Fresh Eyes is about your love for Justin when he comes into sessions. Yeah. I don't know how he's getting so many shout outs in this one. Hey, Justin. But I was going to ask you with Fresh Eyes, one of the things that's crazy is like, it's such like, in a way, it's such a basic song and the production has just the right amount of elements to be fresh.
Yeah.
Something in it, like how do you make that song? How do you make that song fresh?
That great question. I don't know, but that song, my guidance on that song was just don't fuck it up. And that's I mean, a lot of my productions are like, you know, wow, the song, you know, we did a great job writing this song. Now, how do I make sure I phrase it the best way to not fuck it up?
Yeah,
you know, like the original version of Fresh Eyes was all 808s. I'm just kidding. It wasn't. No, but like, you know, there was some vocal chop or something in Fresh Eyes. I remember like most of the percussion was just tapping the guitar and like really soft sounds that have like organic foundation. So it just doesn't feel like it's like you're departing from that vibe. Yeah. It's just don't, you know, in a song like that, it's, I think a lot of, a lot of like the mistakes I made early on as a producer was forgetting how good the song is, you know, and then you keep throwing shit at it. And then like 3 hours in, you're like, this is boring. And it's not, yo. It's like, remember how you felt when you first wrote right. this song? It's like, if you, you know, that for Fresh Eyes, though, it was so like obvious that it was such a beautiful, earnest song that, you know, the only objective was for me to just not disappoint you and Andy.
You kind of do the same thing in Bad Liar, which.
Yeah, restraint.
You know, it's like, it's restraint. And then Rolling Stone makes it the pop song of the year.
Billboard? Or is it really Rolling Stone?
Billboard made it the. I don't. It doesn't matter.
Anyways, somebody yeah, it got critical acclaim, which was fun.
Yeah, it's Billboard.
Yeah, Billboard.
I guess it'd be weird for Rolling Stone to pick. Anyway, maybe not.
But like Pitchfork made it track of the month or something, which was so weird for Pitchfork to make a Selena Gomez single.
Why do you think that is? Like, how did you do that? I think that,
I mean, how did I do what? Like,
I don't know. How do you make a Selena Gomez song, the song that Pitchfork is like?
Write it with Julian Michaels and Justin Traynor.
Okay. That makes sense.
I mean, Julia came in that day and was like, I've been listening to this song. And she played it, the Psycho Killer song. And it was just like, immediately we're like, well, let's write to that bass line. Let's like do something like that. And we literally emulated the bass line and wrote to that. Shout out Talking Heads.
The best. Yeah. Well, also, I think what's cool about that, a female bassist.
Yeah.
In a band in the 80s who like, you know, you listen to And the Days Go By or whatever that song is.
Yeah.
And the days go by and the water hold me.
Oh,
by,
yeah, yeah.
And the bass line doesn't, I don't know if that's what it's called, but the bass line stays the same no matter what the other chords are doing.
Yeah.
That's just the pedal, ballsiest move.
The pedal bass line.
Oh. And it's like, even when the chords change, she stuck on the same bass line. It's like, and yeah. Everyone was like, nah, that's sick.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be really hard to pull off in pop music right now.
Yeah.
So there's this new song that you wrote that came out. It's called New Rules.
Yes, New Rules.
Number one for, I don't know, like 5 weeks? Something like
I think it almost got to 5 weeks, yeah.
4.5 weeks?
4.5 weeks.
Is that, maybe that's more number one weeks than Want to Want Me? Same amount?
Yeah, I think Want to Want Me was only a week and a half. Well, See You Again kept Want to Want Me out of number one for, I mean, that song
right,
is like,
right.
I think that song's Diamond now or something.
Yeah, for sure it is.
Whatever, Charlie.
New Rules, Dua Lipa, you Queen. Are obviously spending a lot of time with her at this point in your career.
I mean, that's what happens. You know, you have a hit with ours, it's like, let's put them back in and see if it happens again.
But I mean, this is such a big hit. And it's so strange because of the other songs that you have are song based, and then you produce them well. This of all the songs that are hits to me, the production carries as much weight or more in a way than the song. At least from my perspective, like for some reason, like I listen to the production. I think the track. I hate when people say this, but the track is a hit. Do you know what I
Thank
mean?
Thank you.
Did this come from that first, or was there actually like sitting there with a piano and guitar and you wrote the song and then you produced it out?
The first element of that track was the shuffle, little doom, da, da, da. It was like, that came like, funny enough, like, Fresh Eyes from hitting a guitar.
Yeah.
And like Emily Warren and Caroline Aylin were just talking about. They were talking in the background. I was just hitting the guitar, and it started with that, and then immediately with the chords. I think, you know, I listened to the work tape, and by the end of that day, it's like 80% of what the song was, which is crazy. But usually, no, it stays with just chords.
It's a really
but that song just it was just that was just a good day for production.
Do you emotionally deal with these things well? Success. Like in a time like this, like right now, today, you have, you know, or this last month, you have another song that reached the top of Mount Everest. Does it change any of your daily routine?
I don't know. No, not at all. I mean, maybe that's a me personally thing. Like, but for the weirdest thing about new rules is that for some reason I didn't like, it wasn't as grandiose and crazy as the as Want to Want Me. Want to Want Me is like a big surprise, but new rules was, I told Steph of the Monsters, I was like, I'll be happy if it goes, you know, top 20 in the US. Cause I just didn't think, I was like, it's like swung, you know, like a swung hook that's not even really a drop, but like still, I don't like I, it didn't occur to me. And I think like the video, the music video is what really catapulted the song, you know, which is another daunting thing about music is that you have no idea how a song becomes a hit. And like maybe the music video goes viral and now people hear it and now people love it because they understand the concept more. And like, you know, I don't know. I didn't feel, almost went on a tangent there, but I came back. I didn't feel this. Okay, thank you.
It's one of us.
I didn't feel it like as much. I mean, I'm really proud of it. I'm really happy, and it's inspiring that a song like that with an artist that isn't that, you know, well, that wasn't that well known in the States could become a number one. And I love that people love the production. I love getting messages from on Instagram from like producers that are like, you know, how did you do this? How did you? They're always like, what preset is that? I'm like, dog, it's not a preset. Explore music more, you know.
Well, what I wasn't.
Which Nexus preset is that? Bro?
What I was, I didn't say so eloquently in the intro, but I was trying to. Is that? I mean,
that intro was very eloquent.
Thanks.
And well, I kind of wish you gave the whole podcast in that. And what did you do just when this, you wrote?
It's new the most energy rules? I have. Every, I mean, people who listen to this have figured out that this is as excited and as angry as I get. And then out of nowhere, I do this intro where it's like. You know, one of the A&R guys that I was talking to about the song that you and I have coming out.
I'll be.
Is, you know, when I said, well, maybe Ian should do it, you know? I didn't say maybe. I just said, you. I might have even said, you'll do it. It's like before I tried to your manager. Anyway, but it
you
was.
You have that power. I'll do it.
It's fun. It's interesting when you have the Ian sound. Is something that when you're not involved, people say like, oh, I want to have it. Can you make it sound like Ian?
No, they don't.
Fuck yeah, they do.
No, they
and
don't.
They do. And what's so crazy about that is one, you know, it was like when we interviewed Julia and I was like, people now talk to you. When they talk about you, they just say Julia.
People say things like, Julia she's the UK Julia Michaels.
It's so weird. Like, that is so weird. She's now like, people just refer to her as like, part of the sound. And when A&R people hit me up and they say like, hey, we want, you know, like we're thinking something that could feel like Ian, and you're
that
like
is so weird.
Yeah. And you're like, whoa, so I mean weird. Like that your is sound very... is becoming like a sound that people refer to other producers to emulate.
That's actually very, I mean, that's a very big compliment. Humbling. Yeah. That's crazy and disappointing. I'm sorry that like it's come down to me having to be that. I mean, that's sad.
Music's
come
struggling.
On, guys. Pick up the pace. Exactly. Let's go. What's happening? Up
okay,
and comers.
So come we're going to do the next segment where I'm going to name five people.
Okay.
And you're going to tell me the first thing that comes off the top of your
head. Oh, fuck. Okay.
All right. I mean, it's really, it's not that big of a deal.
Like, I'm worried about earlier saying, you know, Julia annoys me. Like, I mean that with love. You know, I fucking love her. You know, we've had sessions where she stormed out of the room or we're both just bawling, writing a song. Like, you know, I say it all with love. Okay. I love you, Julia.
Cool. That was the first one. So you answered that.
Julia Michaels?
Yeah. That literally is the first one. Swear. Look.
Total pain in the ass. No, just kidding. Oh, no. You know, if it's like the first thing that comes to your mind.
Yeah.
If we're talking about songwriting, Julia Michaels is honesty.
Oh, cool.
Realness. You know, like conversational lyrics, like the best, like... shortcut to feelings, you know? Like the most efficient, most honest lyrics you'll ever hear.
Dua Lipa.
Amazing. Beautiful person. Great, amazing voice.
Yeah.
Do I have to have one word or is it
no,
like...
No, it doesn't really matter. Just, there aren't any rules.
Her voice, speaking of rules, her voice made new rules.
Well, so she's a, you know, she's a true alto.
Yes.
Who is super nice in the room. Anybody who gets to work with her leaves that being like that. That's the nicest. She's very nice to everybody. She gives everyone attention. She's not like, she does not act like a pop star.
Not at all. She turns it off. and on. Like she's when she's on stage, it's like, oh my God, Dua Lipa. And then you're in the room with her and it's like, Dua, yeah. You know, hey, like, you know, normal person.
Andy Grammer.
Pure heart, right? The example of like the struggling musician who just persists, you know. Didn't he play on Third Street for like a few years?
Yeah.
And like, I think he might have some disease that like he's permanently smiling. Right?
Yeah,
he's,
exactly.
We're on to you. We're on to you, Andy.
Simon Wilcox.
Wow. I mean, Simon's like one of the original gangsters. My first successful song was because of Simon.
And you guys, you know, you guys are in a way.
I want to say love for like all these people. You know, it's like you said, community, right? It's like so nice. My friends.
And number five is Dan Patel, your manager, who also is with Simon. So I feel like there's like you guys are, you and Simon are almost related in some
way.
Yeah,
well, we were the first two, technically the first two clients.
Dan.
When Dan got into managing.
So Patel, number five.
Oh, my everything. I would be nothing without Dan. This is when someone like breaks down, you know, and I won't do it. Whatever, Dan. No, but he's the best manager in the business. The guy is, because, you know, I think it's important for a manager to be like grounded, you know, and he is, it's like, you know, because like, I mean, maybe not everyone, but like certainly me, like I'm a very emotional person and I go absolutely nuts sometimes and, you know, get angry at things I shouldn't get angry at and make emotional decisions. And he's always there to like balance that out. So he does a great job. And he goes, you know, way above and beyond all duties of, you know, a normal manager. Like the reason New Rules exists is because of Dan. He was emailing for a vocal session with Joe Kentish, her A&R, and was like, by the way, I have this song, you know, check it out. That's the beginning point of New Rules for Dua. My manager pitched it. Not even the point of the email. The point of the email was trying to get a vocal session from some fucking jerk engineer that wouldn't send files because I was on a deadline. And it was like, by the way, P.S., you know, so.
P.S., number one song in an email.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, Dan is, he's just like, you know, he's just the best manager and friend.
I'll give you one more.
Okay, give me one more.
Monsters and Strangers.
Talented, amazing, full of love. Those guys too are so fucking nice.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like you.
I feel like I worked. I don't know. I worked with you guys all as a collective, and when I think of like, when I think of the crew, like you guys as a community were like, you know, part of.
As Dan is calling Dan you Patel. Right now.
Should we put him on speaker? I don't know if we can we?
Dan.
Yep.
I'm doing the And the Writer Is podcast right now.
You're on speakerphone.
Hey, Rob Golan.
Hey, what's something that you would say about Ian Kirkpatrick?
What's something that I would say about Ian Kirkpatrick?
Yeah, like you're on the podcast right now.
Oh, I'm literally on the podcast right now.
Yeah, like for real.
All right, Dan. I'll talk to you later, bro. I'll call you back.
How do you explain Dan Patel on the phone, on speaker, in one word or phrase, how do you describe Ian Kirkpatrick?
Extremely fucking talented.
I like that.
Can you imagine if me after like singing like, his praises, he's like kind of a jerk, not really sure.
Yeah, a little overrated.
All right, Dan, I'll hit you when this is over. He is so annoying. Sorry, what was the last name?
Yeah, again? I don't know how we use that, but we might. Monsters and Strangers.
Oh.
And just like I think of you guys as like kind of like one of the epicenters of the community.
Yeah, I mean those guys are definitely an anchor. Like I mean this in the best way. I'm not sure I work with them because they're talented, because I love hanging out with them more. I don't know which one it is more, but like every time I have a session with them, I'm so fucking excited because it's just like, you know, the vibe is just going to be so good. And that spawns great songs. So,
and that's sort of one of the mottos is like, you'd rather have a good day than a good song.
Yeah.
Good songs come out of good days.
Yeah.
But like you come home from a session, you don't come home from a song. If that session is filled with a bunch of dicks, like you're going to walk away and be like, that was an awful day.
Yeah.
And if the song works, you don't care. But yeah. if you walk away from that session being like, that was really fun today, yeah. and I can't wait to write with them again, you don't even know the name of the song. You don't remember the melody. You know, even if you do, like, it's sort of irrelevant.
Yeah.
Like, you just need to come home from work and enjoy it.
Yeah.
And then
Wow. They're like the monsters are a crew that will make you love your job.
Yeah. It's crazy. Do you have...
I, on the other hand...
Terrible.
...are someone that people come and leave and they go, man, that was...
What's advice really you'd annoying. Have for a up-and-coming writer?
Fuck, I knew you'd ask a question like this, and I thought about it, and I can just tell you what I've been thinking about this week, because it always changes, mm-hmm. but there was a quote that I read in a magazine about design that I thought was so amazing, and it was, don't treat your audience like an idiot. You know, like when you hear a song that someone wrote, and you're like, this is so bad, or this, it's like, basically, don't think that I'm gonna buy that lyric, bro. Like, don't, or girl, you know, don't think that like people are just gonna believe what you say, or you know, is, or that's, I don't know if it's good to say, like, don't think that's good enough. But like, I think a lot of, you know, when I hear young writers, I think a few of them are just incredibly lazy with lyrics. Like, they'll play, you know, they're playing catch up with the radio or something. And literally, like, I hear the song and I'm insulted. I'm like, you want to do pop music and you're giving me this? Like, bro, listen to what's on the radio. Like, do your homework. You know, listen to those lyrics. You know how you feel something there? Like, I think, you know, don't treat your audience like an idiot. Don't think that, you know, push yourself. Try to be, you know, smart. And there's a common ground for smart and still feeling. And it's like, you know, I don't like it when people are lazy with lyrics. You're never lazy with lyrics. You know, you sit there and we will talk for 2 hours. You'll revisit lines because it's like, and it'll blow my mind because I'm like, oh my God, I never thought about that because I'm too close to the song. You know, it's like, that's what, you know, I think that's what makes you such a great writer, is that you're very, you know, what's the word?
Dyslexic. No, on some level I joke about that, but I really think that when I look at lyrics and I'm like, oh yeah, I read it wrong 5 minutes later, and it's like, that would be funny if it was actually the other meaning. Like,
yeah.
I think I naturally have, like, I know that I was like half kidding, but I actually think that after time that might be an advantage.
Absolutely. So don't treat your audience like an idiot, yeah. and also don't be so precious. You know, learn to...
Respect your audience for sure.
Yeah, respect your audience. Don't give me a song that sounds like a songwriter wrote it. Don't give me those buzzwords.
It's not about, yeah.
Don't give me love is your drug and, you know, stole my heart like a criminal. Fuck off with that bullshit, you know? Find a new way. Like, of course, you know, a lot of songs are about love and heartbreak and you know, find a new way to say that. Don't just regurgitate some, you know, tried bullshit.
Yeah.
It makes me angry. I get so angry. Yeah. It's like, calm down, bro. What's wrong with you? I don't know. And it's like some really nice writer, young writer comes to me, what do you think? I'm like, this is fucking, what the fuck? Just get the fuck out of here. Yeah. I don't know. It's like, and it's also because, you know, it was in those 2 years of not getting any cuts, I went through, you know, and I would listen to the radio and be like, why does my shit suck? Why is this not working, you know? And
someone said, like, I thought this was good advice. It was, you know, when you're listening to the radio, and this is so obvious, but you know, the radio, Kiss FM or K Rock or whatever, you know, your pop station, your rock station, your rap station, whatever it is that you're listening to, like, they have to put your song between Kendrick and Kanye.
Oh my God.
And yeah. And they don't know who you are.
I don't care who you
is
are.
Is that song good enough that they're going to say, you know what, rather than play this new Chance the Rapper song, I'm going to play this song.
I've never thought of it like that.
If you're going to be like, if that pop station is like, I'm going to play the, you know, New Rules or Want to Want Me or your song has to be at the same quality or better. And yeah. if you are listening to your song and you can put it up, if you can't tell how off it is, then that says something. And if you are being honest with yourself, it's amazing how many times you're like, you know what? I could beat this.
Yeah.
I can beat this. I can beat this. Yeah. And like to feel like,
how
let's
often,
just be honest.
How often you get a message like someone like, I've got a smash for you. No, you don't. No, you fucking don't.
Shame
like it's
you.
it's the what is it called? The Dunning-Kruger effect?
What is that?
It's like when you don't, when you're too dumb to know how bad you are.
Oh, interesting.
It's like there was some psychology, you probably edit half of this out, but like, you know, people that performed lower on tests were the ones that thought they did better. You know? It's like you're not Eminem says it in Rap God. He's like, Are you smart enough to know what you I just butchered the line. It's like something along the lines of like, are you smart enough to know what you what you don't know? You know? It's like you said earlier, you're like, I'm still learning, you know.
Yeah.
You're a fucking number one hit songwriter and you're like, I don't know. You know, I'm still learning. Every day is something different. It's like, you know.
Do you think that people look at you as knowing the answer because of your success? Like now in the room, you're the guy with the answers? Because that scares me more than anything. When people in the room look at you and they're like waiting for you to have the final say and you're like, wait, no.
That might happen to you.
It doesn't happen to you?
It definitely, it starts to, but I'm always like,
are like, is this good? And they look at you for the answer.
Well, then I usually tell them that like, you know, when we, and I'll name some, you know, we wrote new rules. I don't know. It got passed up once and I was like, yeah, they're right. It doesn't really have a hook. Like I'm over, you know, when I was like, don't be precious, like to a fault, that's me. Like I'm overly not precious to where I don't even like, I'll dismiss something or I don't know. Like I don't know. I don't have any answers. I don't know anything.
Well, on that note of you not having any answers.
Sorry.
First of all, thank you for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
And
finally. Just kidding.
Exactly.
Fuck, I wanted to have some sort of bitter like moment where I was like, oh, do I need two number ones to get on your show? You know. Because it felt like everyone did the show except me. Everyone in the room was like, oh yeah, I did the writer. And the writer, and I'm like, cool. And I'm like texting Ross like, hey. We'll get to you, Ian. Relax. That was like our last text.
It literally is our last,
our last text message.
But it is a weird thing because you want to make sure that everyone gets a chance to say what they want, when they want, and how you can do it. And it's like, I'm glad that it happened now and not last year, because now you have, you know, you have another number one song.
I mean, I was never.
You're going to say in.
Yeah, I was never officially bitter, but I really wanted to play that card when I came in.
But,
just be a dick.
But what's weird about all these things is like, you know, your career in 5 years from now.
Dead.
Is done. But like, so everyone's career changes so much so fast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like if you could go back now, you almost want to redo some already from last year.
Yeah,
you know, half the people are now have five more hits or something like that. And you're like, I don't know when the right time is to do any of these, but I will say this about you. It's always the right time for Ian Kirkpatrick. in a real way, though, I look forward to our sessions so much that in this point in my life, I'm trying to whittle out as much negativity as possible and make sure that I enjoy my days.
Oh, so we're not working together.
No, but for real, I've never left a session with you and not walked away feeling better about myself, feeling better about this session, about all of it, because I'm like, I feel like I can be myself in your sphere. And your tracks are so dope and your music's so good and you still let me be myself. And I feel like somewhere in there, there's more of an identity. I don't know. I don't know what it's like to be able to be yourself around somebody who's able to be themselves and then have these songs at the same time that sound like something fresh.
Yeah. Like that makes me feel like I'm doing something right, actually, to hear you say that. That's very,
you know what
that's,
I mean?
Thank you.
I always leave that feeling like I am a quality writer who wrote a good song today and had a good time. And when I get the track back, I'm like, man, this track is incredible. And it elevated my writing skills. And you still allowed me to be myself. And that's really, I can't think of, you know, three other producers that I genuinely feel bring that out of me.
Wow.
And so, like, I appreciate you more than you know, and we've done a lot of we've sold a lot of records together somehow. We haven't even written that many songs, but you know, we've sold millions of songs together. Well, that's like an incredible thing to share with someone.
I mean, I'm so happy to hear you say that. That's amazing. I mean, I want nothing more than for you to walk in and just be, you know, Ross.
Yeah.
Because that's the man I love. And also, you know, I will always put that love into the music that we make after the session because, you know, I want to do you proud and I want to, you know, it's funny. Like a lot of the, like, I don't want to let you down is actually a big motivator, you know, into production. Cause any song you write with your friend, I think probably, I'm sure other producers have that, but it's like, you want to, you know, make your friends proud and like, you know, do your part. And that's the part that I'm the only thing I'm really good at. So.
Well, thank you again.
Thank you for having me. Really honored to, you know, be on this show and it is a show that I've learned a lot of stuff from. So perfect. Really, really happy to be here. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of And the Writer Is. If you want to hear music from this songwriter I just interviewed, be sure to check out our Spotify playlist or visit our website at andthewriteris.com. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe to us. You can also like us on Facebook and Twitter. And the Writer is produced by Joe London, edited by Miles Bergsma, and published by Big Deal Music. A special thanks to David Silberstein from Mega House Music and Michael White. On next week's episode, we sit down with Charlie XCX. Until next time, this is Ross Golan.